Welcome to the Scene Weekly podcast, where we peruse the muse one week at a time with one movie at a time. This week's episode is focused on closing deals in any way possible with Glenn Ross. I've actually tried saying this like a million times and fuck it up each time. Showing out on the silver screen. Come join Jonathan and Steven for another week of hopefully less plot chatter and copious more film banter. We are Scene Weekly and welcome to our world. I should ask you a question. How was your graduation?
Oh, yeah. The graduation from my improv tutorial, my improv 101, basically, what it was. But yeah, it was great. I put on a show with my classmates. And
figuratively or literally?
Literally. I mean, we had paying customers. It cost $5 to come see me perform with my improv troupe. And we did a great job. We coined ourselves Home Improvement was our team name. Nice little pun there. Shout out to my crew. But yeah, I did 8 weeks of training with this class, and then we put on a show, and I think it went pretty well, actually. We forgot all our lines, which I think is the point of improv, so we just made everything up.
When is improv Home Improvement 102?
It's going to be 201 is what we move to, what we graduate to.
When is that?
I signed up for a class. I put my name in there for May, but I'm fourth on the waiting list, so I have to hopefully some people drop out.
Do you need some help?
Yeah. Can you
Tanya Harding? The excuse could be like, you know, they broke their ankles. It was just a little bit of improv on the streets. Just a little acting. They didn't actually get hurt that bad.
I don't want anybody to go to a hospital or anything like that. Just, you know, maybe skip this class so I can drop in.
So Glenn, yeah. Gary Glenn Ross, you got your leads, my friend. You got them, man, in hand.
The leads are weak, Jonathan. The leads are weak.
Do you think to be able to sell something, you need a lead?
I mean, yeah, I think you do need a lead. I think you need to know who you got to call. You can't just call random people. You can't get a phone book and just call.
If Pacino called me up without me knowing, or like there was, I was not involved in a lead. Nobody knew of me. I think I would buy whatever he's got to sell. And I'll, by the way, I just want to add, what color is yours? We're both colorblind. Is this blue on blue?
I think we're doing blue on blue. Yeah.
Didn't plan this, but you know what I did plan? Have you ever seen me wear this on this podcast ever?
Maybe episode 4. I think episode 4 you were wearing it.
Nope. I have worn this multiple times. This is a drill to win. It's going to be a sponsor of ours, but I just want to be very clear. I've never worn this in this getup on the podcast. So I feel very unique. You know why it's different? I have a pick here. I put my pick here, a guitar pick, and that makes it different.
Oh, wow.
So like I feel unique. I feel ready to go. And
how long did it take you to figure this out, to pick this out?
It took me a long time to pick it out, but I feel good.
A lot of mental effort, huh?
Feel good. And I'll give you a bit of background on this that's going to be a mixture of things. A little bit of a changeroo here. And you may not have known about Glengarry Glen Ross for probably a long period of time. I don't think I did. It wasn't one of those movies that gets recommended. It didn't really do well. And, you know, I think it had like a $12 million budget with a $10 million in the box office. It wasn't a big deal. However, everyone involved with it was like, this is going to be a big deal. And while they were actually recording, and I'll give you the background in a second, people would literally show up on their days off and be like, I just want to see like how good these humans are acting. Like it was an ensemble, clearly, and one in which that everyone collectively, when they got together, were like, this is going to be like quite a movie. And it became a cult classic.
It's a Murderer's Row.
Yeah. Anytime you could start the movie, like pretty much instantaneously going into like Coffees for Closers and Brass Balls, like you're going to have something pretty successful, I would think. With, you know, a larger than clandestine group of individuals. But it's a Glengarry Glen Ross, can never be able to say this. It's based on a David Mamet play.
David Mamet. Let's get it right. David Mamet.
On his own personal life of trying to sell himself out there in the world and having some trouble doing so. And so he kind of mixed and mashed stories of, I guess, his own life. But the sound bites. I mean, the sound bites you probably knew before the movie itself. I mean, Coffee is for Closers was like just so quintessential and hit the bricks, pal, which is seemingly still being said. But I mean, that was like my first year of working in finance to begin with. And that, like that movie before I even like saw it, I think, was so utilized in terms of just nomenclature of like people communicating with each other all the time. Coffee's for Closers. And then it became like, okay, can we talk about some like, let's use another reference. This is just cheesy at this point. But anyway, it's a cult classic with a ridiculous stacked cast, 95% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is totally merited. You have Pacino. You have the good Baldwin brother, some may say. One half of the grumpy old men duo, Kevin Spacey. You know, some things could be said there, but I'll leave that alone. I think he's a terrific actor. But GGR, it's a scathing attack on American business practices, to say the least. The only characters we do not witness in some way, shape, or form that are stealing, tricking, or cheating are basically meek individuals linked. I don't know how to say these names. Why don't you go after it, Mr. I know all the names on Earth. And Aaron now? I don't know.
That's good.
Two people, but they're meek and weak. You know, I don't think they really had anything in them, but I ultimately, if their lives and livelihood were pushed a little farther, I think they would also be cheating, the other meek people. But Roger Ebert actually gives us a pretty good review where he said the shabby real estate office in Glengarry, Glen Ross said it well, seems likely to become one of the movie places we will remember, like the War Room and Dr. Strangelove, Hannibal Lecter, his cell, you know, like the moments of Clarice walking up to it. It's divided into two parts, a glassed-in area where the office manager lives, along with the precious leads, the cards with the names of people who might want to buy real estate, and the rest of the office, given over to the desk of the salesman, who tried to sound rich and confident over the phone, but despair is all I hear, my friend. And I think that summary itself is kind of the simplest explanation, but like, there's nothing to this movie. It's just sell some real estate, get the leads, and that's it. And that's what it seems like, at least on its head. So you go into the details of like how people get pressed when their jobs are about to be ripped away. How are you at sales, by the way?
Thought about this a lot this week. And a sales job is something that I think I would be horrible at. I would just, because you would definitely hear the desperation in my voice. I would not be able to improv my way through a sales call to like say, oh yeah, I'm just got back from California and I just saw this land of real estate here and it is a doozy.
But you did take improv. This seems like a perfect opportunity for you. Improv to sales, like it's ideal.
In theory, yes, but I don't think improv always leads to the best acting. It leads to comedic acting, but it doesn't lead to persuasional pitches.
Well, how about this sort of set. for a persuasional pitch? Do you think if you're, you know, what the one half of the grumpy old men duo, or just pick you choose who you are in the nice real estate office there, and the good Baldwin brother shows up and is just like giving you the speech. What type of person are you? Like, how do you react to that? Does it hit you in the loins and you're like, yeah, Coffee's for fucking Closers. Let's get this shit. Are you like, dude, just chill out, brother. Like, okay, you're from downtown. Your watch is more expensive, whatever. Like, what are we talking about here? Which side of the spectrum are you?
Yeah, I think I'm more the Ed Harris of like, Who the hell are you to come down here? I'm busting my balls, making these calls, going to the Chinese restaurant, having a couple of drinks, trying to hit these people up. That the leads are weak, man. You have no idea what you're talking about. It's like this guy, does he really close? Does he have these this idea?
He's got
of what
an expensive
is?
Watch.
It's true,
and a very expensive car.
But I'm sure he has the good leads. That's what I'm thinking.
You think?
Yeah.
Do you think somebody who has just admitted that they don't think they would be very good salesmen, do you think if you had the leads, you could sell? Somebody is like desirous of real estate and you have the leads. You think you could sell?
I think I could do a little bit better. Yeah, maybe. I, you know, it's one of those things I've never had.
Why don't you try to sell me some real estate? How about a condo in Naples,
okay.
Florida?
Okay, right, let's do this. All right.
So ring.
You pick
Hello?
Up. I'm calling you. Okay. Hi, is this Jonathan Lee?
Speaking. Who's this?
Hey, this is, my name is Steven, and I got your number from our directory here. I saw that you put an interest in some real estate down in Florida, in near the ocean.
That's right. Yeah, I'm actually from Kansas. It's a little flat here, and I wanted to get closer to my mom who lives in Naples.
Oh, wow.
Well,
yeah.
Where are you from?
Me, I live, funny enough, I live in Topeka.
Topeka.
Yeah.
Did
you know it?
I do. Yes. And so who are you calling from? What's your organization? Oh,
so it's Mitch and Murray. We are a real estate conglomerate, and we have some amazing land. I will tell you something.
Conglomerate. I always like working with the smaller companies. And how did you get my information?
Well, I got your information from the email that you sent in the link provided a few days ago.
And interesting. And a conglomerate. Yeah, so what's the real estate you got here?
So it's pretty close to Naples, I will tell you. It's a stone's throw away, if you will. But it is some nice land. It's a little parcel of land. It's got some dirt roads, but it's pretty nice.
My great-great-great-great-grandfather got stoned during the Crusades, so that really brings back a poor memory for me.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. That is the Crusades. Wow,
it's okay. He's dead.
You know your lineage pretty well. That's
all right. I'm buying the real estate. That's a stone's throw away from Naples. What?
I'm telling you, I'm horrible. Let's have you do it, okay?
No, it's one is done. So the cast, Jack Lemmon. I mean, it's just everyone in this cast is perfect. Like literally everyone. Like how, I don't think I can actually take somebody out, put another human being in and think it would be a better movie.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. Putting Jack Lemmon as this sad sack of a salesman who used to be good. He's the machine, right? He had his heyday, but he's been on a bad streak.
You know what's funny?
What's that?
I'm sorry. There's interchangeable roles here for all of, I don't know if you looked into like the background behind this, but basically Pacino may or may not have, they didn't know if he was going to actually be in the movie. And so he was always meant to be the true salesman, and then things started alternating where the good Baldwin brother was basically going to shift over to his role, and then he shifted back, and then he basically started playing with the guy from downtown. And the second, I guess, he was just like just testing out the waters, if you will, with James Foley, the director. Like the first time he saw him in the first like minute or 2 minutes in the brass balls and the coffees for closers, he's like, what? Like, you got to do this. And then when they were filming, it was pretty much identical to his performance, I guess, the day before. But and then once Pacino came back, it was golden. But like, Pacino was so funny because like I forgot, as just any movie, I forget these roles and who plays what. But like immediately they're like, oh, like our major salesman. I was like, of course it's Pacino. Like, honestly, like in real life, he could be a salesman. He could. Like, I think you have to be an actor, a good actor, to be a salesman, ultimately.
Yeah, I think that's true. Yeah, and even that that whole first scene with the good Baldwin, as you say, Alec. So this is obviously based on a play, but they added that in for the movie because they needed that set piece to kind of just add a little bit. I think it was, I mean, it's obviously, it stands the test of time of like one of the most iconic monologues in movie history. But yeah, they added it in.
There's a bunch of stuff added in terms of dialogue that was different than the play itself. I wonder what's going to happen. I'm very curious. Have you seen, you know, because the play, I believe, is out now or is coming out very soon.
No, it's on Broadway right now.
And so I'm curious. I haven't looked anything up, and I know who's in it, but other than that, I don't know anything about it. I'm curious to see the mixture of the movie, if at all, because like you have a play that's now on Broadway with major actors, and then you had a film in 92 that was crushing, is a cult classic, with these words, phrases that have been so ingrained in, I think, financial culture or like salesman culture. How do you not add them in? I guess the question is, would you add them in as the playwright or somebody who's whoever is like doing the play? I don't know if David is behind it, but is David still alive? Mamet?
Yeah, I've met David Mamet before. Nice guy.
Did you ask him how to say his name?
No, I just know. I just know being a theater guy. But because I'm an improv. But I will say, like, I don't know if they modify the play to add in any additional like scenes from the movie. I don't think they do, but it's kind of interesting. Like Bob Odenkirk is playing Shelley Levine. Kieran Culkin, who just won an Oscar, is Richard Roma, which is Al Pacino's character.
That I found off.
Yeah. I don't know.
Off. Like, first of all, love him, but I want to see it. I actually want to go to Broadway. I'm going to the city today, but I'd actually really like to see this iteration. But that in particular, I was like, why wouldn't you have like Bill Burr in that, the Roma role? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'd flip that, and I'd take the Jack Lemmon role and make that Kieran Culkin basically. Anyway,
yeah, it's interesting cast. I'd like to see it, but I think
great
I
cast.
Think, I think Al Pacino just kills it as Richard Roma. He. Like him and the director apparently like didn't see eye to eye on how like he wanted Richard Roma to be like more aggressive and mean. And Al Pacino's like, no, let me soften this character a little bit. Let me bring him down. And then when I go up, it's going to be worth it. And I think that was the right move.
Yeah. I mean, you can't just have a guy. I think in the midst of that office, if he were to just be this killer and highly aggressive person who's like just the number one, I mean, it kind of like kills the character itself to some extent, at least minimally. I think if you have a soft zone for him, he becomes human and therefore a better, more well-rounded character. He's terrific. But what a shit situation. And to answer the question I had for myself or for you, in coaching, like if I have a coach now for running, if he treated me like coffee is for closers, I'd be like, dude, we got a problem. Like, first of all, chill the fuck out. And if you talk to me like that again, we can go on the mats. We can work this out. And I'm going to choke your ass out, motherfucker. I don't deal well with that. As somebody, Mr. Don, our former coach, didn't really yell at us too much. But there are people that definitely get yelled at. Strangely, a lot of the girls' team did not go over well. I don't think yelling at people goes over too well. It's there's science behind it. But anyway, I find the 90s movies and any movie that has payphones very interesting. Also, do you know the majority of the budget was like spent on Rain?
This is one of my questions I was going to ask you. Is this one of your Rain movies? Like, is this a good top tier Rain movie?
No, but they spent a lot of money on the Rain because like it's just in an off, and like, you know, they pay the people to come in to act and just it's in this shitty place. But the Rain, it's heavy. It's always thick rain. It looks like it's being sprayed out of a hose. But the payphones scenes always get me. I once when's the last time you used a payphone?
Man, I think like in high school, to be honest. I mean, we had payphones in high school.
So about 10 years ago, I think was the last time I used a payphone. And I can't even quantify, is this use? I don't know. I tried using it, but somebody, won't say names here, but somebody, one of my friends, gave me a call one fine day. I was very scared that they randomly happened to leave a strip club and randomly got into a car that was not theirs, and felt bad a few miles down the street and just left it at this gas station. And they wanted me, or they, there's two people involved, but one is a friend. They wanted me to call the cops and say, hi, from a payphone. Hi, I just got a tip here for you. Somebody left a car there, may have left from a strip club randomly, and then hang up. The problem was I had like three quarters, and each time the payphone sank down the quarters and never gave them back, so I couldn't even make the call. So that was my last payphone experience. Seemingly, my friend,
your friend stole a car outside of a strip club.
That's right. That's right.
Grand Theft Auto here.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then felt guilty.
But felt
about
bad.
It.
Yeah, felt bad. They tried to put the keys in the toilet and flush, and then it didn't flush, and they just left them in the toilet. And I'm like, wait, how dumb are you? Drunk. Probably dumb too, but drunk. Just never a good decision. I don't know how I got involved. I didn't want to be involved, clearly. But anyway, I tried my best. And it took me 20 minutes to find a payphone. There aren't many payphones in the city.
Did you have quarters on you? Did you have
quarters? No, I went to get three quarters, assuming like it was a long distance call. You could pinpoint exactly my 10 years ago, where was all of my friends group at a strip club? Anyway, weird situation. But I do remember the times of like putting in like the dimes just to keep on the call. But anyway, payphones. Big fan of payphones. I do miss seeing them. If you're ever in the, like, you know, if you're dealing with like bad drug dealers, you could always meet them in like a payphone area. Now you don't have that. Where do you meet bad drug dealers these days? You know?
Yeah. I don't know.
San Francisco. San Francisco. Anyway, don't know where we're going with this, but the rain effects was the single largest cost in the movie, and I don't think they were very good.
Yeah, I like the rain in this movie, but I think they spent the money pretty well on that.
Are you only happy when it rains?
I'm pretty happy when it rains because it's usually a glim day. Glum? I don't know.
Glum.
It's a movie day basically. You go to the movies or you stay in, you watch a movie, whatever. It leads to that. But I will say, the driving force of this movie is the idea of stealing the leads, right?
Yeah, that's
and
right.
And this is Ed Harris's character, Moss, I believe. And I'm trying to wrap my head around it. He's just planting this idea. He's not going to actually do it. He's going to have an alibi, and he's like, they're going to think I do it, but I'm not going to be traceable here. And he's planting the idea for other people to do it. Right?
Yeah. Would you steal the leads? Do you think you'd be better at stealing the leads or just selling somebody like somebody without the leads? What do you do? Your whole livelihood is on the line here. Do you steal the leads? Do you help? Do you think about it? What do you do? Or do you just quit?
If I was like in Shelley Levine's character, and I apparently have like a granddaughter at the hospital that can't pay her bills and they're going to kick her out, and I need $10,000. I need $10,000. I might steal the leads.
Because you're only happy when it rains.
That's right.
Yeah.
Would you?
You've never heard
that
song. You've never heard that song, have you?
I have heard that song. Just waiting for you to sing it.
No. You know, in that situation, boy, I'd probably steal the leads. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Would I go rob somebody?
It's a non-violent crime.
Steal the leads,
right?
Yeah.
It's not like stealing a car out of a strip club. It's just breaking into an office.
They're basically telling you, like, hi, guys, why don't you go steal the leads that are in here? The most important thing to your livelihood right now. And they're right there in this room that's just not even locked. You can easily, we'll leave them here overnight. Feel free to go sniff them if you like. Like what? It's set up for them to be stolen. Let's be abundantly clear here. I will say though, they never really got into the steak knives. I was upset about that. Because like as somebody who is like a connoisseur of knives, like I spent over $1,000 on our last set of knives. Like,
oh wow,
back in 92, what kind of knives are these? Are these like from Japan, German knives? Like, what are we talking about here? And I want to know the expense to them. Do you know what I mean?
Well, let's back this up.
It could be a very profitable knife set.
let's back this up. First place is a Cadillac.
Yeah, didn't even say if it was like a used, is a brand new, like what kind of Cadillac.
There was a picture of a Cadillac. It looked like
maybe you got the picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they're spinning first place on a Cadillac, second place a set of steak knives, I think they gotta be German, right?
And third place, you're fired. It's not a good Baldwin, half Baldwin brother. How many Baldwins are there? I don't even know. Is there three?
There's got to be three, at least three.
Right? I feel like there's a third that I'm missing entirely right now. But anyway, steak knives look good. Cadillac looks good. I think that actually should encourage somebody, at least Roma, to get going. This week's episode is sponsored by Soul Roots Running Company, where you can find the best covers for your feet that make you travel comfortably and quickly across sidewalks like Shell Silverstein. Soul Roots offers all varieties of running shoes, clothes, and accessories. And for 10% off, please use the code SCENE, S-C-E-N-E, at checkout. And any order over $180 is free to ship anywhere in the continental United States. Head over to shop.soulrootsracing.com and fill up your cart for 10% off with the code SCENE. But I'll have to say, I couldn't help but think of a yin and a yang in this movie when I was watching it, in that this movie is what could happen or could have happened to Aloha. Where you have like this stellar cast and then it's like, wah, wah, wah. And then you literally have just like them hanging out basically the whole movie in this grungy office. And it's just actors who know how to act with a great script. And that's it. That's all you got. I know that it's like, it's all you need, but like, it's a lot harder clearly to produce a good movie that way, but boy, did they crush. I don't know. You know, I say this every week on something, but you'd be hard pressed to find something that is as simple as this, shot in the same similar location, basically with a simple script of just getting the leads and then the dynamic of everyone involved. It'd be tough. It's a tough one to beat.
I think it's one of the best ensemble casts put together on film. With people like at their stages of their career, like you have Pacino, who's like right, probably peak Pacino right there, early 90s, right?
Yeah.
And then you have, Alan Arkin, Ed Harris. It's incredible, and it's something that you don't find very often.
I wonder how much leads are. You know, because like, let's not talk about email. Somebody would probably go into an office and they'd be like, yeah, I'm interested in buying some real estate. They get their phone number, they get their name. And that becomes so prized of like, you know, they're not in our location. Let's say they're looking for some property in Texas and we don't do Texas. And like, you sell that to somebody. I wonder how much that would cost. Like, how much, like, what would that be, you think? You know, commissions, let's say, is like a 3%. Like, what do you pay that person, that one single lead? Probably 10, maybe 10% of the ultimate 3% closing cost or something less. Anyway, I'm curious. Like, I'm on with the lead game. Be curious of how to get in there. What would that look like?
I mean, where are leads coming from now? I think it's all just data scrubbing. You know, if you literally click something on the internet that you might be interested in, that's where the leads are coming from.
I think it's flipped on its head. I think that there probably aren't many leads anymore. And inversely, like the consumer now, whatever that consumer is, now has the ability to go on Zillow and search themselves, for example.
That's true.
So like, yeah, the real estate agents, I wouldn't say like high end properties per se, but I would say on the lower end properties, it's probably a lot easier to find something yourself. And you can probably kick out the commission. With that being said, do you always have to be closing at work?
Yeah, every day we close the restaurant, but I'm not always closing. A lot of the time we're open.
I get this, like, you know, always be closing. You got to build up, right? You can't always be closing. I don't think you can always be closing. Like, sometimes you have to just sit back and just have, like, shoot the shit with somebody. You got to build it till you get to the actual close. You don't go in and say, sign this immediately. You got to chill out. I don't really agree with the always be closing moniker.
Well, you got to look at it like this. Like, again, Al Pacino's character, when he's talking to Jonathan Pryce, and Jonathan Pryce is about to walk away because his wife isn't going to let him go through the deal. He's not closing, but he is. Like, he's like, hey, man, I want to know how you are. I want to know how you're doing. I want to know about your personal life, blah, 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 blah. But the subtext there, the underlying motivation, he's trying to close that fucking deal.
Yeah, you know what's interesting about this movie, and I don't really know the best way to even put it. I mean, I have a note in my head about basically not only are they trying to close the real estate deals, but like even their interactions with each other is like angling for a closing of an emotional closing, if you will, of like how to get the leads, for example, like, you know, trying to entice somebody to steal the leads. Everything in life does appear, at least in their world, to be always be closing to some extent, which makes for an interesting set of time. But have you ever had a boss that was like an always be closing mentality, or like even like a friend or somebody that's just like, why don't you smoke some weed and chill the fuck out, brother? Like, I don't know. You ever had one of those bosses?
No, I've never had like a boss that's just
never
or a coach.
Wow.
That's ever like breathed down my neck like that. Cause I don't work well under that kind of pressure.
Yeah.
I'm more of a collaborative, like build me up, not tear me down kind of guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm the same. I've had a couple.
Really?
I've had two. One is a current friend of mine, I would say. We work really well as a friendship, horrendously. I will never work for him again. Shout out. I know who you think you... you know who I'm talking about. But with that being said, I will talk about a previous boss that I did have. Everything was of high importance. And on terms of a scale of risk, like everything was a 10. So like, I don't know. I remember we were like a month out from having something due, basically. And he made myself and a chief technology officer work through it for like 24 hours, basically straight, to get it right. And then we just sat on it for a month. And I'm like, I don't understand what's going on. Anyway, he ended up getting fired. And everyone he hired, myself and like seven other people, all got fired because he was stirring the pot with the always be closing shit every day, all day. And all of us got let go because of it. Am I sour? Maybe. Still had a great job there, but I can never work with somebody like that again. It's you have to understand risk. And I think ultimately you're not going to do well. I think, you know, I think Steve Magnus talks about this a lot, as well as Alex Hutchinson in Endure, the book. But basically that mentality on the football field, pushing your players, like you can't drink water, you know, at like halftime or like just in practice, like it's 103 degrees with pads on. Like you can't drink water. It makes you weak. That type of mentality. Yeah, yeah. And this kid died in Texas and the coach wasn't held responsible, but like, you know, went to court and things. This has happened multiple times, but that mentality I think is shifting. And hopefully it is, but I would say the coffee's for closers mentality. Maybe it works with people that are on the back burner of their lives, like, or not the back burner, but like have somebody in the hospital that's close to them and they have to get this money. But yeah, it wouldn't work well with me, and I don't work well under it either. And you know what I would do? I would say fuck a lot in that environment. And you know what they did? 138 times they uttered fuck or its derivatives. Did you know that?
I didn't look it up, but I knew it was a lot. Yeah. Wow.
And I think that's 128 more fucks than you've ever said in your entire life, Stephen.
That's probably true. That's probably true.
When's the last time you said fuck?
I don't know. It's not one of the top words in my vocabulary. I just don't. I'm not a guy that swears. I'm more like you know, Will Smith. He chooses not to curse in his rhymes. I'm like that in my life.
When you say a cuss word, you're the type of person that when you say it, you're like, I don't really feel it either.
Yeah, because I didn't grow up saying it. It was never something that I went to.
I didn't either. And I didn't cuss until I was in my 20s, probably.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Same. I remember I said damn maybe once when I was in the house and I got heavily scolded for that. But when I say fuck, I mean it and I feel it. And I think other people feel it too. Like, fuck, he means that shit. Whereas you're like, oh, like you, it's more of like a darn. Oh,
oh, darn. Oh, man. Gosh, gee willikers.
But they, when they said it, I was like, especially with Pacino, for example, when he says fuck, he means fuck way more than I do. It's like, it's an intensity that I appreciate. But I think 138 times is quite a significant feat.
Is it too much? Is it, I mean, it's significant, but is it earned?
Probably. So much so that I didn't realize it said it that much. So I think it was earned. If the environment is sets the tone, if you will, then I think it's a good one. But I will say, I really want to see this on Broadway. And I think the way they set up the characters, they chose correctly, but I think they should have been interchanged. And I wonder, do they ever do this? Because they did that. By the way, do you know that the cast from the 92 movie, they got back together. I don't know where it was, but they actually switched roles where like Pacino became like like Jack Lemmon. And like they switched roles, but it wasn't for a movie or a play. It was just like this quick 10-minute breakdown. It wasn't like publicized like very heavily, but like they switched roles.
I would love
roles.
To see that.
Me too, right?
Yeah.
It'd be sick. But I'm very curious if on Broadway that actually happens, because I think that'd be a really cool selling point of, and very difficult, mind you.
For every night, mix it up.
It'd be very difficult for the actors, clearly, but one in which I think you could do that and pull it off, because all the dialogue's so intermingled to some extent. They're talking over each other, they're finishing each other's sentences, for example. And I think it could be like one of those run-ons that you switch up the character set, which would be cool, because it would be that effort of Clue, for example, tried to do this and really releasing multiple versions, thinking people would show up multiple times. Never worked. But I think in this instance, live, you would get that performance and it would be a different thing. If you had the money, I would do it. I'd go check it out a few times.
I would definitely check it. Did you watch the Baldwin do his SNL skit with the elves and Santa?
The one you provided me 90 seconds before we started recording this.
Yeah, that one
you sent to me. Yeah. Yeah. I did watch it. Always be clogging. Is that the
cobbling?
Cobbling.
Yeah.
Cobbling. The act of making shoes. Is that what it's called?
So yeah, the act of making shoes.
Because didn't
the tools are no good. The tools.
I didn't watch the whole thing. Daniel Day-Lewis gave up his whole existence as an actor to cobble? I don't even know. Why don't they just say make shoes? Isn't that so much easier? I don't even know how to use that word. How do you use cobble? Cobblestone?
I have no idea.
What is cobblestone?
It's what you walk on.
Just like shoe walking material? I'm so confused right now. Like, a cobbler, because I think of cobbler. I think of cobbler, like I'm thinking of a food. And then I also think of a gobbler with a turkey. And so like the confusion I have, is it just a shoe, the act of making shoes?
I don't know why they call it that. Cobble. I would like to own a pair of Daniel Day-Lewis's cobble shoes.
Have you ever purchased a pair of I don't even know how to say this, shoes made by a cobbler?
I would say so. Yeah, I wear them every day. They're Danish clogs.
Made by a clogler?
A clogler out of Europe. And it's something that I wear because it's non-slip and it's great for the kitchen. So
that's nice. I was in Greece. Yeah, I was in Greece and there was this famous sandal maker. Is he a sandal maker? Now I'm confused.
Do they call them sandals because they walk on sand, and cobblers because they walk on cobblestone?
I think so. You can only use your sandals to walk on sand, though. You can't use them anywhere else. But I had these very nice leather. It took a while to break in. Put olive oil on them to make them a little darker. Had them for like 10 years and then they broke and I had to get rid of them. But they were very well made by hand and took like a week to get them done. But perfectly suited to my foot, my feetsies.
You still own them?
No, they broke and I had to throw them away.
Ah, yeah. Bummer.
Can't even remember the guy's name. I have a picture with him though. But he's a famous dude from somewhere in Greece.
Somewhere.
Athens, I'll say. I don't know. Anyway, great movie. Good cast. No, great cast. I found it interesting. By the way, does Roger, Mr. Ebert, did he, how does he scale things? The stars? I think he gave this 3.5 stars.
He does 4. Yeah.
Okay, so he gave this 3.5. And I was like, is there only like a 4 stars max for him? Curious to see what he would give a 4-star like movie. This is just kind of crazy. Anyway, glasses. How do you feel about your glasses these days? I feel like my vision's going bad again.
My vision has not changed since sophomore year in high school, and pretty proud of that. You know,
did you know
eating a lot of carrots?
Why don't you get LASIK?
I'm not too keen on eye surgery. I don't know. It just kind of freaks me out. Plus, I like wearing glasses. I think it's a good aesthetic.
You can still wear them.
Yeah, but then I'd be a poser. And I don't want to, I'm
Did
not
you know Horace Grant fixed his eyes? Do you know who Horace Grant is, first of all?
Mm-mm. No idea. That
basketball player who made the glasses via when playing basketball popular.
The goggles, yeah, the goggle glasses, yeah.
Got surgery. Still wore them after getting surgery. Do you know why?
Tell me why.
For the kids. The kids that felt bad. You can still look cool and play basketball and wear glasses. Isn't that nice?
I love that.
Yeah.
That is very, a true king right there. That's amazing.
Very sweet. Yeah. I think I read that like last week. Just random tidbit of information that I read last week, I can just completely
So
insert.
You're saying if I get LASIK surgery, I can still wear my glass for the kids.
There you go. You're picking it up. It must be your improv classes. Just picking it up right here.
Just wait till 201, man. Just wait. Yeah. To the moon here.
So how are we going to rate this? I've got things to do.
Yeah, what do you got to do today? You got to be downtown?
I got to go to sell some real estate. I think I could actually sell real estate. But I couldn't sell their real... No, I couldn't. I couldn't do it. If I didn't believe in it.
Yeah. Do you think that real estate in Florida was shit? Like, was it like swampland?
The leads, you mean? Or no, the other... Yeah.
The Glengarry, Glen Ross real estate area, I guess.
No, the Glengarry, Glen Ross are... those are the leads, though. Okay,
are the leads.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever real estate they're selling down in Florida,
they're not good. No, it's not good. None of it's good. No. I mean, by the behavior that these individuals are like, the whole movie, none of them seem to be good people. All of them seem to be bad. So I would say that I'd have to believe that no, it's not good real estate.
Do you like talking to salesmen? Because those people at the end, they bought $82,000 worth of land, but they just like talking to salesmen.
No, I'm instantaneously an asshole, purposefully.
Oh, really?
Instantly, yeah. I get off the phone so fast. I'm not one of those that stays on the phone.
What about door to door? Like, have you ever had a door to door salesman come to your house?
I am instantaneously an asshole. Instantaneously. The only time somebody like, yeah, I don't give a shit. Like, I say the worst things, the worst acceptable things possible and immediately. Like, for example, this is terrible. For example, somebody, I'm mixing and mashing these stories here, but collectively they mold together. lot of people trying to sell me shit to go on my roof, such as solar panels here. I would imagine.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great thing, right?
Horrible. I think it looks ugly.
You want to do good for the environment.
I think it's ugly as shit. So I don't want them in the house. And so I originally used to say, I think it's ugly. It's ugly as hell. I don't want it. And then it's like, well, we have the new model that actually sits a little. And I'm like, see, you got me talking more than I want to talk. So now I reframed it. There's a lot of iterations of this. So I've gotten my bit down. So now it's, no, I don't want this because my friend sells it. And then he died. Yeah.
And so they have no retort to that.
Yeah, there's no nobody yet. Everyone's like, what the fuck, man?
Okay. The first person that has a great retort to that, you have to give them a little bit of slice, like a little time. Yeah. You have to see what they say.
But I think I'm like, this is really horrible. It's not all true. I did have a friend who did sell it, whose brother died. But like, it's a different story. It's the same. Yeah, it's a story that I thought it randomly live because I was like, I am fucking tired of this. But with the people that do come to my door that are on like the basketball team, trying to sell like Snickers, I'm also instantaneously quick with that. I don't even like. Oh, you're from the local basketball team, and I'm just like, here's $5. Okay, bye. Like, I don't want it. I don't need to hear it. You don't need to sell me. Here's $5 and leave.
Do you get a Snickers?
Oftentimes, 99.9. If my daughter's there, yes. If she is not there, no. I just say fuck off. I don't want the Snickers. I don't know what's in that Snickers.
You're just paying them to go away, basically. Just go.
Then leave. I give it to my daughter, and she figures it out. Yeah, that's a bad move, too. Anyway, yeah, get out of my vicinity. I love when my father-in-law opens the door, though. I love to see that interaction because he basically just speaks Korean. And he doesn't mean it, but he's even ruder than I am. He'll open the door, and he's like, no, I don't own the home, but just like some random shit. I was like, I don't own the home. And they're like, I don't know where to go with this next. Like, I'm confused. What do you mean you don't own the home? They're like, from the local basketball team. He's like, oh, I don't play basketball. And they're like, no. So it's always confusing, but watching it it's hilarious. So like I don't save the person because I want to see this go down. It's like a bad improv. Like it's really fun to watch. But anyway, I really despise people like selling stuff door to door. My mom, by the way, salesman of the year, bought a Kirby vacuum when I was like 10 from a door to door salesman.
That's expensive, right?
It's over like $1,000 vacuum. Wow. Do you know how long that motherfucker lasted?
I would hope 20 years.
The next 30 years.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
What? From a door to door salesman. Probably the best purchase that she's ever had in her whole life. I mean, that's unreal. Anyway, how do we rate it? What are we going to do?
You go first on this. I'd like to hear your sales pitch.
Well, you know, Steven, I was thinking about this, and it's about the best ensemble outside of Aloha that's ever been produced for a single movie. And I think absolutely 100% of the characters and actors crushed in their own single roles. I wouldn't change much at all about it. For whatever it's worth, you know, it doesn't tickle my fancy for a 5-glass movie, so I'm going to have to give it a 4.5. And I know that's probably weird to hear, but in terms of the actual half glass I would take off or the monocle is probably due to poor rain and throughout. I just want to say some shit so people make fun of me online so that, you know, this would be great. Like, he's talking about the rain again. But it wasn't really about the rain. It's just like, I don't know, the directing of the movie could have been better. Framing, that could have made me feel better. I think it could have been shot by James a little better. And I think I have to take a half glass off. But otherwise, I would say it's everything else is five for me. But it's overall, it's a 4.5. I have to give it a 4.5 for me. I'm going to start giving things less. The five is a golden territory, my friend.
It's a golden territory. It's for your, the best of the best, the cream of the crop. This was never going to be a five glasses movie for me either. And I'm teetering on where to put it.
Sure.
Yeah. Murderer's Row of casting. I think my favorite performance on this is Jack Lemmon. Just the sad sack that he is, and he thinks he has the upper hand, and then he says something and it just gives it all away, and now he's desperate again. But he was riding high because he just had this amazing, like, his fluctuations of like acting in this and emotion, like Jack Lemmon.
Outside of Pacino, everyone on the movie, like everyone said, this is their favorite, including the director. Like, this is the best film they've ever worked on.
Yeah, that's fantastic. 4.5 is good for me too. I'm not going to be five. I don't think I could go down to a four because it's just such a joy to watch them chew up this dialogue and just play off of each other. I love the Mamet speak. All of the 138 F-bombs that we got in there. I love that there's little to no exposition of, like, we don't know Jack Lemmon's daughter. We don't know the situation that's going on. Like, we're just thrown into it, and we gather the pieces and we figure out what's going on. We don't need this whole, like, diatribe of what's going on.
It's a great Mamet play. I wonder, has he done anything else? I haven't heard about him, Mehmet, anywhere. But I'm looking forward to the Broadway. I like how it ends, too. Just done. Yeah. Just how it started, too. Here you go. Here's a little snippet. That's it. That's all you get.
That's all you get.
Yeah. It's like a play, just like closing the curtains. All right. We're done.
4.5 for me. What do we, I'm curious. For you to introduce our movie for next week.
Well, I have to say, do you want to wait until to have the introduction, or do you want to say what we're going to do?
I would just like you to introduce, like, just give us a little sneak peek at.
Well, first of all, because is this your movie, or is this the movie that I was recommending we go to next? Because I'm in the midst of watching both.
Oh, okay. So are you in so I've laid the groundwork for a number of films here, but I do know that I kind of want to go with the 2012 movie that you recommended.
Oh, me. So not your recommendation, mine. So Pixels, we're going to watch. You had no idea what Pixels was. I love this improv by you. I'm going to make this improv. I'm going to make this a forced improv where you say you hadn't heard of it. First of all, I find that somebody who has met Adam Sandler before enjoyed his movies throughout, talked to him even recently, has never heard of Pixels, including the fact that this cast is absolutely stellar and somebody that actually grew up with the time period of the gaming systems being utilized here and referenced. Boy, it's a joy to watch. I mean, in the referential, like, movie for video games here is it's Arcade City. Some may say Arcade Hell, but it's Arcade City for me, and a joy to watch. And any motherfucker, I don't know what Rotten Tomatoes says. I bet I looked it up. I think it was something horrendous. You all need to get murdered badly or eaten by a Pac-Man, basically. So we're doing Pixels. It's a joy. Love it. Just a joyful, fun watch.
I can't believe
you haven't seen. Have you started watching it?
No, not yet. I'm doing it this weekend. It's my weekend watch. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I have to get into the city immediately. So,
okay.
Until next time, always be closing.